Welcome back, Brandon Lowe's Show, 95 The Sports Fox. You can always take us on the go, 95thesportsfox.com. TuneIn app, iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, all your streaming services over there on the interwebs and your smartphones. And, of course, you can always call or text the show, 304-405-6301. Join the conversation. Let us know how your brackets are doing right now, who you think is going to win these next couple games and get to the Final Four. It is the Sweet 16. I can't wait. I've been waiting all week for college basketball to start back up. And this guy is on the line from WNation.com, as well as Between the Ears podcast. Listen to that on Friday evenings at 6 o'clock here on 95 The Sports Fox. He's living on the show lately. He's Chris Hall. Chris, welcome back, man.
I love being here, man. I'll live here every day in the week.
Oh, you're too kind, my friend. And you do wonderful work for us, of course, and WNation.com. You've been keeping everybody posted on the spring practices going on with the Mountaineers. Of course, we'll get to that. But, you know, first I want to talk about some baseball. We kind of briefly talked about it on Monday, you know, West Virginia dropping the series, their first Big 12 series in Waco. Of course, Baylor, really, it's interesting. Baylor hasn't really left home all season long. I think they played one road game when West Virginia came in that weekend, and they were sitting at 12-3. So essentially all home games. And so West Virginia had a tough series there. And now they're looking to bounce back tonight, which is always a fun night down there at Power Park when West Virginia and Marshall take on each other. And it's right here in the capital city. So if you're around Power Park or, you know, your short drive around, you can come down at 6 o'clock and watch the Mountaineers and her take on take each other on some baseball.
Yeah, I mean, it's always interesting when these two schools get together, no matter what sport it is, that in-state rivalry. And, you know, a lot of people are expecting West Virginia to, you know, win, to beat Marshall. But as you mentioned, you know, West Virginia is just coming off a series sweep against Baylor. Their bats have been sporadic at best. Pitching's kind of faltered a little bit against Baylor. So, you know, you just kind of look at the Marshall schedule, who they've played. They beat Pitt. That should make everybody happy. But, you know, you kind of look at this Marshall team. I believe they're, 15-8 overall. You kind of look at their lineup. They, you know, we were kind of going over it. They have six guys batting over 300. So they're getting guys on base, getting opportunities to score runs, and that's going to be something West Virginia is going to have to manage. You know, with these midweek pitchers have kind of struggled. They did against Morehead State a couple weeks ago, so it'll be interesting to see if they can keep the pitching. You know, this game may end up being 15-12 the way the pitching has been going, and just with the way Marshall's been playing as well. They've been a little bit inconsistent in pitching as well, so. It's going to be interesting. I fully expect a good game. Marshall always gives 100% when it's West Virginia. So if West Virginia is just going to have to rely on pitching and hopefully let their bats keep going.
Yeah, two of these programs, kind of on opposite spectrums as well, just based off the history. Randy Mazey comes in, and you mentioned those pitchers and defense and the bats have been really strong over the past 2 weeks. Struggled a little bit, obviously, that weekend against Baylor, but speaking with Coach Mazey last week, it was something that he was really harping on. But you look at two of these programs, they are in-state. Mazey comes over and has done a tremendous job with West Virginia, and a great job. And then you look at Marshall, who has a lot of history as a baseball program, and now is going to get their own stadium finally on campus. So, and the Mountaineers, you see them doing stuff with their place. So both these programs growing up big, and it's good to see baseball healthy in the Mountain State for these two schools.
It is, and you're starting to see both programs get a lot of players in-state, and that's something West Virginia kind of gets, you know, we know it gets overlooked in all the sports because it's just a little old state, but you're starting to see guys, you know, Jimmy Gillespie from Preston County from West Virginia, you know, he ended up getting drafted last year, not here for his senior year. So there's plenty of in-state talent. I think that's what makes it kind of fun when you see two in-state schools go at each other with all the in-state talent that's been coming around lately, and it's just a matter of who's going to play more consistent today? I think that's what sports in general it is. Who's going to be consistent? I know Nick Snyder is probably going to take the hill for West Virginia. So see how deep he can go. And then you're probably going to see some freshmen make appearances. They make appearances about every game. Bo Lowry, Brock Helverson. So we'll see. And maybe if West Virginia has a lead, if Sam Kessler can close it out in the eighth and the ninth.
Just some serious history here. Mountaineers have won 5 in a row against the Thundering Herd and 7 of the last 8 meetings since 1993. West Virginia has won 16 of its last 19 in the in-state series. West Virginia leads the all-time series 46-24. And this is an all-one one because this began in 1910. So a lot of history there between these two in-state schools. And as you mentioned, junior left-hander Nick Snyder will get the start. Marshall starter has yet to be determined. So maybe a little strategy there, or maybe they're just not I don't know where they want to be as far as West Virginia and their hitters and their lineup there as well. West Virginia is number 12 in the country, first in the Big 12 with 51 stolen bases. Mountaineers are number 32 in the NCAA with 23 home runs, which is not too shabby, Chris, to have talk about those bats, all those programs playing baseball, and you're sitting at 32nd in the country. Any coach would want to hire, but that's a pretty good place to be in right now.
Yeah, it is. It's something we've been kind of waiting on for those bats at the beginning of the season. Now you're starting to see Kevin Burphy, Marcus Emmett, Tyler Jones, the leadoff hitter, get in on the action, Alan Gonzalez. So they have plenty of lineup. It's mainly just not taking advantage of their opportunity, leaving a lot of guys on base. So if they can start getting a lot more of those hits when guys are on base, they would have, you know, a lot more success. But the pitching lately has really failed them. And, you know, dealing with a lot of freshmen, having to replace a lot of guys, you're going to have your ups and downs. I think Maisie's done a great job of pushing the buttons, maybe pitching those guys a half an inning, maybe an inning or two, just kind of riding those guys. So it's going to be interesting for West Virginia to see how they bounce back, because you know they kind of had that game, two of those games against Baylor, they had the lead. So if they can, you know, kind of overlook that, just kind of shrug that sweep off and get back on the winning track before they play Oklahoma this weekend.
Again, that game is set for 6 o'clock. If you don't know the time, I'm sure a lot of people know the game is being played down there at the Power Park. Marshall, West Virginia will meet if you get some time and maybe get some food and you're around the area, get down there and support these two in-state schools. It should be a great matchup. Let's move over to football. You've been following along through spring practice. First off, before I get your take of Neil Brown and his comments in the press conference yesterday after practice, I think it's really cool, and I made this comment at the top of the show, that they're miking up these coaches. They're giving sort of a behind-the-scenes or behind-the-curtain, so to speak, of these coaches. And it's big because you have a new coaching staff. So you're wondering what these coaches are like. Well, West Virginia's giving it to you, and I think it's brilliant.
It is, and I mean, that's how they are when they're not mic'd up. I mean, that's exactly who they are on the field the whole time. You know, as you can see, they have a lot of excitement. Al Pogue's probably Mr. Excitement when it comes to the coaching staff. He likes to talk a lot of trash to the offense, to the offensive side of the ball. So the kids really respond to it. They have fun. They're not just having fun, but they're getting coached up. But what you see from the football accounts, that's exactly who they are throughout the whole practice. I mean, that's just, you know, Neil Brown is like night and day from Dana. We all saw the pictures of Dana on his golf cart sitting there, letting his assistants, you know, handle everything. Neil Brown's totally different. He is on the field. He moves from unit to unit, coaching everybody up. And, you know, he lets his assistants do the work, but he's right there with them all over the field. I mean, he literally goes from unit to unit, coaching and teaching and just keeping those guys motivated. So it's a lot more different than what we have with Dana, but there's no doubt what the way these guys coach, that they'll be ready for fall camp.
If you're just joining us here on the Brandon Lowe Show, we got Chris Hall from DoveyNation.com, at DoveyNation on Twitter, also Between the Ears podcast. He's host there, and he does that with Skylar Callahan of DoveyNation as well. And you can listen to that on Friday evenings at 6 o'clock here on 95 The Sports Fox. Hey, I think it's interesting that coaches, and you speak of Neil Brown and how he interacts with his assistants and his players, how there's a different style of coaching throughout the country. You know, some guys are like Dana, where they sit back and they let the assistants do it for the most part. But I tend to like what the style of Neil Brown is, essentially being kind of tight and making sure that everything is tweaked the way it's supposed to be and details are fine-tuned and everything's organized. You know, we talk about the captains and, you know, splitting up and the accountability that I was talking about yesterday, or holding guys accountable, finding guys that step up in different type of things and different type of subjects throughout this kind of journey that he's on with this new coaching staff. I just think it's cool. I'd rather have that style if I was a coach, based off just the fact that you need guys to be paying attention and buying in. You're essentially learning a new system, and not just a coach staff, but a new system. And you want to grasp that, because, you know, at this point, these players, anybody can play. You know, these coaches got to get to know these guys. They have film for some of these guys, but, you know, you're going to have to earn your spot. Dana did that, but you're really going to have to earn your spot with this new coaching staff, and I like their style so far.
Yeah, I mean, they're taking this spring practice with all fundamentals. Now, they're always going to teach fundamentals throughout the season. That's something that they're never going to stop doing. But right now, it's just about getting those guys used to this coaching staff. They got to get used to how they run drills. They got to get used to how they scheme. They're not throwing a lot at them scheme-wise. You know, we heard the same thing with Dan. It's a three-day installment of the offense. It's different. This is just the base offense. It's a three-day installment, but they're going to go over each installment three times. So basically what they're doing for this spring practice is getting geared up, fundamentally sound, get everything ready. So when they go in the fall, they don't have to skip a beat. You know, there's no more teaching. It will be more scheme. I'm sure the first week they'll have to shake that rust off again because, you know, they're not allowed to do any football activities together over the summer. So that first week they'll have to get everything back acclimated. But as far as just, you know, scheme-wise, it's all base package, and they're just working on the fundamentals towards their scheme. So you're not seeing a whole lot. They're not throwing a whole lot at them. They're just trying to get them to learn technique. And then when it's detailed, it is detailed, from pointing your toes out when you're lining up on the outside with the receiver, just the smallest things. They want everything perfect. I mean, when it comes to stuff like that, they harp on it. So it's all about fundamentals. You're hearing a lot about how they practice when it comes to, they don't want them on the ground. That's how injuries happen. They don't want DBs diving out, laying out to try to get the ball. Receiver, same way, don't go diving for the ball. That's how you get hurt. Keep your feet under you. If you get beat, you get beat. It's about getting in the position and playing smart. So hopefully, I mean, we've seen it over the last few years. Brandon Ferns, who just announced that he's retiring from football, had a bunch of injuries while he's in West Virginia. We had Qualls, who's medically cleared to play right now. He got injured. Drayvon Askew here. I mean, how many? The list goes on and on and on with players that got injured in practice. So hopefully, that's the right step forward, so they're not getting injured before they even step on the field, because it seems to be a problem in West Virginia. So hopefully this route kind of gets West Virginia healthy going into a season.
Certainly. We've kind of gone into some of the situation as far as where the offense and the defense and schematics changing up, and obviously on defense when you sort of have that Bud Foster-style defense, the 4-2-5 look with Koning. But, you know, you talk about the offense and the quarterback situation, a lot of people expect Austin Kendall to play. Because, you know, he transfers in from Oklahoma. A lot of people think, you know, if a kid comes in from Oklahoma, he's going to get playing time. Coaches may have tipped their hat a little bit to that. You know, you can't say and guarantee, I guess. I mean, I'm sure coaches use that. But it's interesting, if Kendall does start, that two spot with Jack Allison and Trey Lowe, which, you know, Trey Lowe spending time with the baseball team, I think hurts him more on the football side. I mean, I don't know at what point is Trey going to make some type of decision if Trey does get to play and start eventually. I know he's still young, but do you think Allison is the go-to number two if we say Austin Kendall is a starter? Or could Trey Lowe, because the way that offense is ran, leaning a little more on the run, could you see a more mobile quarterback in Trey Lowe?
You know, Trey Lowe hasn't missed practice. You know, he is on the baseball team, but he hasn't missed any football practice. And I believe he's, you know, he's really honestly making a push to climb that ladder. It's interesting because, you know, I think a lot of the information that's been given out is Neil Brown does like to rely on his quarterback to run. And that's not necessarily true. Neil Brown will, you know, you could have used Will Greer probably as a dual threat quarterback, but we all know his best asset was his arm. But what he was able to do was just to make plays, extend plays, and make plays down the field. That's really what Neil Brown's looking for. He doesn't necessarily have to run a guy, but if it worked towards them, if that's one of their specialties, like we know Pat White back in the day, he was better with his leg. If that's what it takes to win, that's what he's going to do. So it's just going to be a matter of how they grab the offense. 7-on-7s look good for Trey Lowe right now. I would say out of everyone that's thrown, it sounds crazy. But, you know, we've seen just, as the media, we've seen just a small sample size. He looks good on those 7-on-7 drills. He's probably throwing some of the better balls on 7-on-7. Austin Kendall is dealing with a bit of a knee injury. Nothing serious, nothing that's going to hold him out. They're just taking it slow with him for obvious reasons. But they're all getting equal reps. I think that's going to pretty much how it's going to be throughout spring practice. They'll go over all the film again in the spring, and then they'll have a better idea of what they're looking for in the fall. But as of right now, they're all getting equal reps, and it is not crazy to think that Trey Lowe wouldn't be the backup quarterback, or maybe even Allison, maybe the starter. We don't really know yet. I think we assume a lot, but all these guys haven't really seen a lot of game action. We haven't seen a big sample size from any of these guys. We've seen very, very small. They've been capable, but what they going to look like in a live scrimmage when there's linebackers blitzing, defensive ends crashing on them, and they have to make those split-second decisions. That's really what's going to separate these guys. Everything looks good in drills. I know the quarterback's a bit sloppy. Even Neil Brown, we got a little glimpse of it Saturday looking through the weight room, but I couldn't see a lot. Neil Brown wasn't happy about it after Saturday. After he looked at the film, he said it wasn't as bad as he thought it was. So he may not like anything. You kind of got to take that with a grain of salt. He may not like anything and then liked a couple things. So not as bad as it looked isn't great. But, a whole new receiver core, new quarterback, new system, timing is going to be a little off. So it's going to be, I think the real competition won't happen until we get in the fall.
Yeah, certainly. Speaking with Chris Hoff from Duffy Nation, talking spring practice for the West Virginia football program. I think, it's interesting. Trey Lowe, of course, playing baseball, and we heard that last year where he hasn't missed any practice, speaking with the media and yourself and the media, that, Trey Lowe does a great job of balancing both sports. Despite the fact, and that's a tough thing to do, being scholarship like that and playing baseball and football. So certainly has an arm. I'm sure bring in a different dynamic, like you said. If you bring in like a Trey Lowe who's more mobile and you see some of the plays that Neil Brown ran at Troy, if you got a guy who can present that sort of kind of threat with his feet, it makes the defense a lot more off, honest. They don't have to kind of back up, so to speak, if you have maybe a Kendall or a Will Greer in there, knowing that his arm is his best asset. But if you got a guy like Trey Lowe who's throwing it around good and can make some plays with his feet, you never know. At some point in the season, you might be seeing a Trey Lowe possibly start if he catches on.
Right, and I mean, for Trey Lowe, even if he makes plays with his feet, he's going to have to still make throws to keep the safeties honest. So.
Yeah.
That's really where it's going to come down to, being able to read the defense and can you make those tight window throws? Sometimes we saw Johnny Manziel just make plays with his feet. We've seen Major Harris just make plays with his feet. I mean, it's just about making plays. And that's really what it's going to come down to. Can Jack Allison, we haven't seen him mobile. He looks good in practice mobility-wise, but can he make the throws? At the end of the day, it's going to be about making throws and making plays. And unfortunately, I don't know how much of that information we're going to get. We're still early. We're not even halfway point of spring. We don't know how much information we're going to get on that during spring. I think our best guide will be spring practice. The spring game will be probably our best guide to kind of get a good feel of what everybody's doing. But, it's just going to be interesting how, we know that they're probably going to rely on the running game. You got four running backs that can be starters almost anywhere around the country. It's going to be deep. They're going to have to try to find ways to get them balls. And then you bring in the freshman, Tony Mathis, who could probably start immediately at a lot of Division I schools. So they're going to rely heavily on the run. So you're going to assume there's going to be a lot of people, a lot of teams focused on that run. So it's going to be, at the end of the day, they're going to have to just make the throws. And don't envy with the talent. I think with the way it came into the season, West Virginia was thin at quarterback, but I think the more it goes on, you're starting to see this quarterback room getting stronger and stronger.
Certainly. The other position you mentioned, wide receiver, T.J. Simmons, the Alabama transfer, will be the most experienced returning wide receiver. Had some bright spots last year. I don't think they really threw him the ball as much as, a lot of fans would like to see, because when he touched the ball, he made a lot of really big plays and really strong plays, too. He would carry guys and carry tacklers and get five or six more yards. He's a strong kid, obviously a strong route runner. Saw that big play even at the first game of the season against Tennessee. And, so I'm interested to see that. And, just some of the other guys returning there, but the most experienced guy in T.J. Simmons is certainly one to watch. I'd like to see that kid grow in that system as well.
Yeah, and Marcus Sims as well. I think
he
kind of gets lost in the shuffle because you haven't heard his name a lot in spring practice. Neil Brown addressed that the other day. He's just been hampered with injury. He's been limited with a hamstring. Still practicing, still full go, but he hasn't been able to see fully what Marcus can do, and we've seen it last year. I mean, I believe he had one game with, 10 catches or something like that, something crazy, where they just kept going to him. So we know he can get open. It's just a matter of him getting used to this system. I have no full confidence in Marcus Simmons to be able to do that. TJ Simmons, you know, he's athletic freak. I thought it was a great move to make him one of the leaders. He's one of the mouths on the team. He's the one that gets everybody motivated. So making him a leader, I thought, was a really good move on Neil Brown's part. And you see all the young ones. I mean, we saw Sam James in high school, ran track, extremely fast, making a ton of highlights for his school. So he's been able to make some plays. And then Tevin Bush, they really like Tevin Bush in that slot. He had a couple of touchdowns yesterday during a light scrimmage. We all know his speed. We saw it last year as well. And Dylan Spaulding, a big target on the outside. I think he's kind of impressed. And Bryce Wheaton as well. I've been able to get up to get the ball. It's a young group, very talented group. I don't think there's any real negative against what Dana recruited, especially a receiver. I mean, he brought in a lot of talented receivers in at West Virginia, and this is a young group. I think they'll be able to do more than what's needed for this West Virginia group, because if you can rely on Sims and Marcus, rely on Sims and Simmons on the outside, and that opens up a lot for Tevin Bush in the middle, and you're going to see a lot of these young receivers start to emerge as the season goes along.
Running game, of course, will be important with that, and you got a lot of running backs coming back with experience in that running back room, so that'll be fun to watch as well. Starts with the offensive line, though. You can't do anything, and we've kind of referenced that, talking about the spring with the center position. It's a big one. If you don't have the right center to help run the offense and help the quarterback out and communicate to the quarterback, get the snap back, which is also important, as most people would kind of attest to a couple of times when Greer was back there, the ball would kind of get away from there, and you could lose some yards, or you have to throw the ball away. So the center position is huge there. What's some guys you're hearing as far as the center position?
Chase Bernhardt looks like to be the front runner right now. I mean, they really, really like him. They're trying a few other guys. I think guys like Hardy's one of them. But Chase Bernhardt looks like he is the front runner right now for the center position. They like the way he has command of the offensive line, and you kind of go across that offensive line with Matt Moore. The way he splits up practice with that line is impressive. You know, he doesn't coach them as a group right now. He's coaching left and right with his grad assistant, Tyler Orlowski. We all remember Tyler Orlowski, great center for West Virginia a few years ago. So he's got a great grad assistant with Tyler. He splits up the offensive line from right to left. You see Kelby Wickline on the right tackle. Colton McKivitz has moved over to left tackle. They've got some big bodies in there. I think they're still concerned about depth-wise. I think they have a good feel for their two deep right now, but I think they want to, you know, they want a stronger presence along that offensive line. You're not going to win games without winning the line of scrimmage. But it all starts up front. Mentioned the running game, got a bunch of talent. It ain't going to matter if you can't block up front. So that's really what they're going to be working on. I think Matt Moore's definitely heading in the right direction there. He's getting the calls ready for those guys, and they're big bodies. Colt McKivitz did a great job on the right side when Yanni Kajus was here on the left. Kelby Wickline stepped in for Kajus. I believe it was the Texas game when he got kicked out. Played really well, played okay in the bowl game. So I think moving Colton, I think Matt Moore feels that he's probably his best at offensive lineman, and moving him to left tackle is probably really good. It's just going to be an adjustment for him and working him on the left side. But I think overall the line is going to be more improved, and that's really going to be the staple of this team with this running game, is this offensive line. And if you can control that line of scrimmage on both sides of the ball, more often than not, you're going to win the game.
On the defensive side, a lot of people were talking about Heartland put out a spring preview, and a lot of people were wanting them to put in the Alabama transfer at the linebacker position. We talked about linebacker position being kind of one of question there, Tonkery and those guys, but, you know, and you talked about Ferns leaving. David Long is, now going to the NFL. Linebacker position is going to be pretty interesting.
Yeah, it is. Vandarius Cohen, the Alabama transfer, he's nothing less than a stud. I mean, he sticks out there. He's huge. He's a middle linebacker, and he's fast. It'll be interesting to see how he's able to digest this defense. Can he make the plays without thinking? Dylan Tonkery right now has really kind of been that lead guy in the middle. No surprise, high football IQ. We've gotten really used to Dylan Tonkery. And really after that, you got Shea Campbell, played really well during Tonkery. Zach Sandwich played well. I mean, he was, by the time you took Ferns out and everybody else, he was the four-string linebacker, stepped in, did a nice job. So I wouldn't say it's a deep a deep position, but I would say there's a lot of experience at this position, but there's just not a lot of experience within this defense. Three down linemen with a four-man front philosophy. It's interesting when you talk to Reese Donahue, there's going to be more movement along that defensive line. It's not so much of a base package along the defensive line. So he may line up a little bit, Reese Donahue may line up a little shade off the nose guard. So just little differences, stuff like that. They're trying to learn it, but the linebacker court it will be interesting. Again, I think this is something that will shake out in fall camp more often than not to see where they put these guys, because I think they'll still move some guys around between the inside and outside linebackers. You're seeing Quantel Reigns kind of move around as well from safety to linebacker. So, it goes back to recruiting with Dana and Gibby. He's got a lot of fast guys, athletic guys, and just from the sounds of it, Neil Brown likes what he sees from the defense. Obviously, he might be a little harder on offense, but every time he mentions players, a lot of them are from the defensive side. So I think this defense is going to improve pretty quickly. I don't know how dramatically as far as, top 20 defense, anything like that, but I think you're going to see a lot of improvement on the defensive side.
Yeah. Speaking with Chris Hall of WNation.com here on the Brandon Lowe Show, spring practice for the Mountaineers. You know, I was just about to say the speed there, obviously this recruiting class is Gibby and those guys, so they're built for that type of system. I mean, obviously, going from that 3-3 stack over to what this is essentially, as you mentioned, 4-2-5 or 4-3 sometimes, I guess. I don't really know much about what he's going to run over there, but having that type of speed, you think you'd be able to get more pressure on a quarterback and move some guys around, drop some of those athletic guys in coverage when you need to, whether you're playing a zone or whatever look you're trying to give the quarterback. But I really, if you can get some of these guys to run downhill and get after it, it could be a lot of fun, and you can get more pressure on the quarterback, because that was something that was lacking in that Gibby's defense, was essentially that quarterback would sit back there unless one of our linebackers sort of kind of sprung up upfield and got to that quarterback eventually.
Yeah, I mean, Koenig likes to blitz, but you should be able to get pressure on the quarterback without blitzing. You need coverage sack. That's something that West Virginia really lacked for a long time, let's be honest. It's been lacking for a really long time. Coverage sacks hasn't been a staple in West Virginia's defense for quite a long time. So I think that's something that they can change with the way they're running this defense. They have that hybrid outside linebacker safety. He's going to cover the corner. So, there's going to be a lot of nickel, especially in the Big 12. We know how everything is spread out in the Big 12, so you'll see a lot of nickel, but I think you'll see a lot of pressure from that outside linebacker position. And if you can get Tonkery just clogging up the middle, I think that, one of the biggest guys on this team right now is Darius Stills at nose guard. Right now, to me, it looks like he's going to be starting at the nose guard's position. So I think it's not so much a deep group on the defensive line, but I think what you have is about five or six guys that are really, really good, and it's going to be a matter of staying healthy. And if you can continue to kind of interchange those guys throughout the line, it'll be interesting to see if anybody else emerge, maybe even in the spring, but more so in the fall, see who else emerges, because they moved James Comito from the defensive line to the offensive line. So they're a little thin. It's all a matter of can they stay healthy, how well do they adapt to this system.
Outside of, you mentioned Neil Brown and how impressed you were with him being the head coach and walking around with assistants and being very hands-on, which coach on this new staff have you enjoyed watching out there the most? Get after his guys, or maybe showing him things, or animated? Which guy do you like watching out there in practice?
Well, Al Pogue's definitely the character of the bunch. He has a lot of fun out there. He interacts with the kids a lot. Like Jamal Adai, former Mountaineer, the way he's coaching up those defensive backs, Koenig. I mean, you can really go through the list of all of them. But the more fired up guys, I would say, is Pogue and Adai. Those are the guys that you can hear a lot. They coach them hard. When they do something right, that they just coach them maybe three straight plays, they're the first ones out there to be excited for them. So seeing Adai and Pogue out there running around, definitely Neil Brown, the way he interacted. They all interact with them like family. You know, we've heard them preach family, and that's pretty much it. It's like a bunch of brothers and cousins out there. It's like a family reunion. So they have a lot of fun, but they're teaching them as well. But Pogue, I'm sure if he hasn't been mic'd up, he'll be mic'd up soon enough, because all the cameras seem to follow Al Pogue around, because he's definitely having a lot of fun in practice.
I believe he's actually on the new preview today, so be looking out for that. They did a preview of what's to come, and I believe he is the next coach up for that mic'd up set. So that's pretty cool. I'm looking forward to that. All right, before I let you off the air here, obviously we already talked Sweet 16 stuff on Monday, so let's not get into that. But I saw Cliff Kingsbury, former Texas Tech coach, now Arizona Cardinals head coach. They put an article out that he's allowing players 20-minute breaks of social media and their phones. And basically he said it's because these guys, their average age is 25, so they're just basically out of college. And he thinks this is a good way of going about. Now, I bring this up because we were talking about differing ways of being a coach, right? Some are more loose, some are more tight. Well, this is certainly loose, but I find it hard to kind of compare things to a college kid who's not getting paid to play compared to guys who have a lot of funds, all right, and a lot of access to things. I'm not sure if this is the right move by Cliff Kingsbury being a rookie coach, and I think that's one of the mistakes that these college coaches make is they go to the pros and they try to treat it like college football.
Yeah, it's definitely an interesting take. Obviously, it's a new era with social media. It's kind of wait and see if that does pay off. I would be for one that, you know, we're football. We don't need a break. If you're going to do a break, you're going to do something football-related that's fun, right? That would be more my old-school approach. But you just don't know. You know, it is a different generation. This may pay off. Just get them not thinking football for 20 minutes. And if that's what it is now, is phones, then so be it. We'll have to see if it pays off on that one. I don't think it will. I think that's too much of a distraction. You can kind of get caught up in what, you know, obviously media is around this practice. You can get caught up way too much in the media aspect of it. But it'll be interesting to see how the players are responding to that. Because to me, it seems like they would lose focus pretty quick, and you'd have to get them back on spend 5-10 minutes back on the right track. I don't care how old these players are. We're all human at the end of the day, and it's really easy to be distracted what's going on social media.
All right, final one. Conor McGregor announcing his retirement from the UFC. Well, he said mixed martial art. He did this before back in 2016 when he got upset about the main event or whatever. I put up a poll on our page just for fun. There's a lot of UFC fans here in West Virginia, I'm sure. A lot of mixed emotions about Conor McGregor. You know, some don't think he should be on a list of greatest of all time. Some people don't believe it because he's in his prime. Do you think Conor McGregor is retired, or do you think he fights again?
I believe he's a fighter. He's a fighter through and through. Whether he goes WWE for a while or whatever else he does, I think at the end of the day, we'll see Conor McGregor fighting, because there's very few people out there that have true passion for their craft, and I fully believe Conor McGregor is one of them. He is a showman, did a great job of selling his product, but at the end of the day, he's a fighter, and I believe 100% he'll be back in that octagon again.
All right, it's Chris Hogg. Make sure to follow him over on Dovey Nation. That's DoveyNation.com, at Dovey Nation on Twitter, at WV, that's both capital, and then Hall, capital H, Billy, on Twitter. That's his personal account. Follow along with Chris as he covers spring practice and baseball and all that good stuff for us in DoveyNation.com. And also listen to Between the Ears podcast, 6 o'clock on Friday evenings right here on WBES, AM 950 in Charleston, and stream it at 95thesportsfox.com. And then, of course, it goes over there to WNation.com as well. All right, Chris, appreciate your time, my friend.
All right, as always, man, appreciate it. Hopefully next week we get to watch practice Friday, so hopefully next week we'll have some bigger news next week after practice.
We certainly look forward to it. Chris, you take care and enjoy your evening.
You too, buddy. Thanks a lot.